Episode 87. Kids, welcome to another episode of BulaNetwork.com. My name is Randy Kintra, coming to you from the Yellow Studio in Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas. I am a keeper of notebooks. Lots and lots of notebooks. For years, I used the venerable reporter's notebooks. If you're not familiar with that, you can Google it. I'm pretty sure I did a blog post at the website at BulaNetwork.com on, I'm thinking it might have been, I might have even listed this in episode, let's check here and see, episode 75. If you check back at episode 75, it's entitled Behind the Scenes of the Yellow Studio, Randy's Three Addictions. In fact, you'll see a link to it over on the right-hand column. Check out these posts is the title. It's episode 75. You'll see a picture of some of my favorite notebooks there. And there are three of them. And the oldest one that I have used is the reporter's notebook. And I am fond of a particular brand, by the way. I am fond of AMPAD. A-M-P-A-D. I think it's short for American Pad. The backing is really firm. Nice cardboard backing, which I like. And the quality of the paper is good. It's not stupid thin. These are 70-sheet spiral notebooks bound at the top. So they're really slim, fit in your hand nice. And they're called reporter's notebooks because that's what they are, used by reporters. The next one in that post that I listed is the Moleskin, which I've been using. I don't know. That Moleskin brand was born. It's not that old. We think of it as being just, man, they've been around forever. But the brand was born in 1997. I don't know that I started using them in 1997. I don't much think so. It's probably around 2000 that I began to use Moleskins. Now, the newest one on the field of play, pun intended, is called Field Notes. And that's what brings me to today's show. I have a number of these. These are just terrific. These are little 48-page memo books, and the paper is graph paper. You know, the little squares. It's really, they're ridiculously durable little things. It's kind of a cardboard-like cover, but they're just terrific. The size is nice, and they're flexible, and they're just easy to stuff in your pocket. So I'm a huge fan of those, and I have lots of them. And I have before me, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I have 5 of them that I had bound with a rubber band. And occasionally what's the point in taking notes? What's the point in keeping a notebook if you don't ever open it to see what you wrote? I know people who do that. I don't. And I write stuff all the time. It's a sentence here and a sentence there. Sometimes it's a quote. Sometimes it's something that I overheard. It may be a to-do list, but not in the traditional sense. Not like a shopping list or something, but a to-do list that's a little more important to your life. I've got one here, and it looks like must have been talking to somebody about podcasting and about setting up a studio, because I've got various notes of where they could go. I don't remember who I was talking to, but it's just called podcasting gear, and there's a list of things, and there's no date, so I don't know. The prices were, whatever the prices were at the time, they may or may not be that same thing, but this was just a way that I could write that stuff down and have it have it handy. But I'm looking through this, and I wrote down a line that Johnny Depp uttered in the movie Public Enemies. Public Enemies. We're having too much fun today to think about tomorrow. I haven't seen the movie. That was a clip. I remember seeing it. I don't remember when. Again, I should date these things, but this was well over a year ago. It was some TV commercial for the movie coming out. Johnny Depp, Public Enemies. I don't know what public enemy he played, by the way, in that movie. I should have Googled that and researched it, but alas, I didn't. We're having too much fun today to think about tomorrow. Now, for some people, I don't know that they're having too much fun today to think about tomorrow, but they're too busy with whatever today to think about tomorrow. And lots of people are too busy doing whatever it is they're doing today. We're too busy tweeting. We're too busy blogging. We're too busy podcasting. We're too busy doing whatever it is we're doing. And so much of what we're doing, by the way, is passive. Blogging's not passive. Podcasting's not passive. I guess you could argue that tweeting isn't necessarily passive, but, let's rephrase that. Let's call it productive, being productive. We're having too much fun today, or we're wasting too much time today to think about tomorrow. Why bother? Why bother? Somebody tweeted today. It was a pretty clever tweet. Procrastinators never get any work done. True enough, they don't. But I got to thinking about this little phrase, and I hadn't thought about it for a while. I know this notebook is at least a year old. We're having too much fun today to think about tomorrow. And two kind of contrasting thoughts popped into my head. One is that is absolutely true, that people are just, we're so busy chasing our tail, we're so busy putting out fires, we're so busy just doing whatever it is we do, and we just don't stop long enough and pause long enough to think about, okay, now what do I need to do tomorrow? What do I need to do tomorrow to be more effective, more productive? The paradox view of that is that all we do is think about tomorrow. All we do is plan in our head, maybe on paper. We write these to-do lists tomorrow. It's tomorrow. It is that procrastinator's, that vexing that goes on with all of us when we embrace procrastination. And true enough, a procrastinator's work is never done. And I think a lot of us, maybe all of us, can fall prey to both of those things. And sometimes we can fall prey to both of those things at the same time. And so that's what prompted me to hit record today. This is an interesting sentence written in one of my field notes. You know what I'm going to start doing, by the way? Because in field notes, inside the front cover, you can write the date. You can write a start date, and you can write an end date. It's never dawned on me till now that it would help if I would use that. And then I would at least have some sense of when these things were written. This, I have no idea when I wrote this. But I'm not going to be bashful. I'm just going to tell you. Here's what it says. I wrote the word story, and I drew a box around it. I draw lots of boxes. Do you draw lots of boxes? I draw a lot of boxes. My wife once observed about those boxes, and she made some kind of psychological analysis. Not that she's qualified, but being married to me for as long as we have, I guess she is. Story, and I drew a box around it. And I put four question marks after it. So you've got the word story in a box, and then off to the right, four question marks in a row. And here's the question I wrote. I have no idea when this was written. Will Randy get his life together? Will Randy get his life together? But now here's a better question. Well, I don't know. That's a pretty good question. It's yet to be seen. Will I get my life together? I obviously was not feeling that my life was together at this point. Do you feel that your life is together? More often than not, do you feel like it's together? I got it all together. I've probably gone through some prolonged periods where I felt like I had it together. Now, I often look back at those times and think, boy, what an idiot you were. You weren't even close to having it together. Because the tough part is defining that word together. What does that mean? Now, I can tell you there have been times in my life where having it together meant making more money. I can tell you there have been other times where having it together meant, man, just getting rid of this dread. There were other times where having it together meant that I was able to, you know, to achieve something, reach some position perhaps, reach some place where I felt like, okay, this is more of an accomplishment than what I was doing. Yeah, it just morphs over time. It really does morph over time. Will Randy get his life together? Well, that remains to be seen. And, I may never know. Those that are left after my passing, they may be able to determine, you know, he kind of sort of had his life together. I rather suspect that all of us, no matter who we are, no matter what we have, and no matter what our accomplishments are, I rather suspect that we have times where we've got it more together than at other times. I guess, the struggle and the strive is to can we get it together more often than not? But this may be a more interesting question, because here's what I wrote right below, will Randy get his life together? Now, keep in mind, this is all under the box story. Are we designed to live through something rather than to attain something? ? And out beside that, I wrote, yes. I underlined yes twice, and I put two exclamation marks after it. Are we designed to live through something rather than to attain something? I wrote yes. Now, let me explain. I believe that, by the way. I don't know when I wrote this, but I believed it, obviously, when I wrote it, and I believe it now. I believe that we are designed to live through things rather than to attain something. And I think that means that the struggles and the trials and hardships and obstacles. Have you ever met someone who doesn't feel that they learned and that they grew and that they were made better because of those things? Me neither. I've never met anybody who... No, I've met people who went through things and they didn't fully understand them at the time, but... And I'm not saying that we look forward to those things, and I'm not saying that we can see value in struggles and hardships. And the one that leaps to my mind, and maybe to yours, is death. The death of people that we love. And we think, well, how does that make us better? But it can. It can. You may know that I'm a fan of American Chopper. I'm not a motorcycle guy. I started watching the show years ago. And then when the father and the son started in these lawsuits and this rift developed. And if you haven't watched the show, here's the real brief backstory. The father had started some ironwork shop a long time ago. And as a hobby, he liked to make motorcycles, kind of old style choppers. And so he started a chopper business. And it was called Orange County Choppers, OCC, Orange County, New York. And they had this TV show, this reality TV show, and Discovery put it on. Well, they just, as you can imagine, they blew up. They blew up. And they started doing really high-end custom-made choppers for celebrities, and sometimes they would make them for various organizations that would use them to fundraise. And anyway, they kind of took off. And the show began to kind of, I don't know, I guess it stagnated. I heard that the ratings, you know, began to kind of dip. And I don't believe that this happened in order to get the ratings up, but the father and the son, there was just always just such tension. The son was this creative guy, and he wanted to, you know, really push to the edge with design. And the father was just this, I don't know, just a drill sergeant. A drill sergeant control freak, and they just butted heads constantly. Until finally, one year, this is a couple of years ago, on one of the shows, the son just, I mean, he had it. He just had it. But they sniped at each other constantly. And he left, and the father fired him. Well, they had a partnership. They had a legal partnership of some sort. And Junior, he had some stake in the company. And so when he left, you know, he basically wanted the dad to buy him out. Well, what happened is the father ended up suing the son. It's been nasty for 2 to 3 years. And just this last, the most recent show, they've just started the new series. And now it's called American Chopper Senior versus Junior. Some father who's been diagnosed with cancer, and here's my point about, are we designed to live through something rather than to attain something? So picture this. You've got this successful custom chopper business, and now the son has his own called Paul Jr. Designs. He's no longer at OCC. A fan of the show, a dad and his grown son, and the dad, you can tell the dad's sick. No idea how old the guy is. But he confesses he's dying of cancer. And he comes to see the son. He comes to see Paul Jr. And he tells him, I really wish you and your dad would make up. Because, you know, hey, me and my boy, we used to go at it just like you guys did. And I don't have long to live. 3 months. 3 months isn't very long. I really want to encourage you to just do whatever you got to do to make peace with your dad. And of course, Junior is very accommodating and he thanks them for coming by. Well, then they go over to OCC. They go over to see the dad, and the father makes the same appeal to the dad. Well, you know, the dad's a little more resistant to the message. He's like, you know, well, I'm doing everything I can. You know, the father, in my opinion, the father's just really deluded. I mean, in his mind, he's busting his hump to try to make things work. But from my vantage point, he's doing everything wrong. I mean, this man needs some serious help. But he's too proud and he's too hard-headed and he's too obnoxious to know it. I'm very much in Junior's corner, by the way. But I began to think about that, and I began to think about this phrase, this sentence, are we designed to live through something rather than to attain something? Yeah. I wrote yes then, and I believe that now. And it's not just the fact that I'm not saying that, okay, we're meant to just, it's just one travail after another travail after another travail. But the fact of the matter is, these hardships, these difficulties, if we will open our mind and if we will open our eyes to the lessons that can be learned, there's huge lessons to be learned. In this particular story that I just related, the huge lesson to be learned is, yes, life is short. Life is short, and these family relationships and the people that we love, for what? For a motorcycle business? I don't care how successful the thing is. Now, I'm a father of two kids. And I'm going to tell you right now, there is not a business on the planet, including Apple, that would be worth sacrificing the relationship that I've got with my kids. It wouldn't be worth this. I've got two. I've got a grown son and a grown daughter. They both are married. They both have kids of their own. There's no way that Steve Jobs and the board of Apple could come in and say, we're going to sign over Apple to you, but you're going to have to jettison one of your kids. You're going to have nothing to do with one of your kids. Pick one. You know, just keep Apple. I'll continue to be a fanboy and buy your stuff. Thanks, but no thanks. Now, I know that not everybody would say that. And certainly, I doubt Senior would say that. Well, because he's fighting his sons over a business that is nothing anywhere close to the success that Apple has. So it's very clear where his allegiances are. The business and money. Stuff. So are we designed to attain stuff? Are we designed to attain something? Or are we designed to go through something? Are we designed to endure some things and to learn some things along the way? Now, under that, I drew a line, and then I wrote this sentence. Are you a character who wants something? Obviously, I was clearly reading about storytelling and things, and I've got a number of books in my repertoire over here, not that I've written, but that I've read about character building and storytelling and whatnot. I mean, I'm 54. Come on. When I was in college, I was in journalism school. So writing and words have always been very, very important to me. So it's not some newfound thing, thanks to the internet. Are you a character who wants something? It's pretty boring to read a story of a character who doesn't want something. And I guess what is so compelling for me with American Chopper, particularly this new series, is we've now got characters, and they wanted something before. Okay, Junior wanted the freedom and the flexibility to do his designs without his dad just constantly climbing all over him. Dad wanted Junior to be wired like him. Dad wanted Junior to have this, you know, hardcore blue-collar, show up early every day, stay late every day kind of work ethic, and he just doesn't. And so that was the tension, and you could tell what the characters wanted. Well, now it has shifted, and now Dad wants Junior to go away. Dad wants Junior out of his face business-wise. Dad doesn't want to give up a dollar. Dad's willing to pay the attorneys more than he's willing to give Junior his chunk of the business, whatever it may be. Junior hasn't sued Dad, by the way. Well, other than countersuing just to protect himself. Dad started the litigation, according to the show. And so what Junior wants that to just go away. Certainly he would like to have what he feels like. He feels like he spent 10 years of his life building this business, and yes, there's no doubt he wants remuneration. Hello. he wants remuneration for that. Is that right? That's not right. Hello, Randy. Go back to journalism school. Go back to English school. He wants compensation for that. And you think I'm going to edit that out? You're out of your ever-loving mind. I don't edit. You know that. Yeah, it came tripping off my tongue quite nicely in my mind. It just, when I got to my mouth, I couldn't make it happen. So now, Junior, that's what he wants. I mean, but you can tell he wants this tension to go away. He wants the family back, but he wants his dad to chill. He wants his dad to get it. He wants his dad to just not be the control freak that he's been forever. Now, is that something that his character is going to get? I don't know. Probably not. It's not looking good, I'll put it that way. Well, the dad wants Junior to just go away, and he didn't want to pay him anything. He kind of sort of acts like, yeah, you know, there are times that he seems to be perfectly okay with. Now, what he seems to be enjoying about the tension with the sons, because he's got this tension with all the sons, by the way, and that tells you something. There's three of them. There's three sons and a college daughter. She's not in the show. And one of the sons who bought the construction business from the dad, he's not in the show either. But the dad is estranged from all three sons. That's kind of telling to me. And as a character, what he seems to want is not so much reconciliation, but he really enjoys being the victim. He really enjoys, I'm trying everything I can. I don't know what these guys want from me. You know, I've done this for them. I've done that for them. And this is how ungrateful they are. And he takes shots every chance he gets. So that's what his character wants. Now, underneath that sentence or that question, and the question was, are you a character who wants something? I drew another line, and under that I wrote, a character is what he does. A character is what he does. And that certainly is true in this TV show I'm talking about. It's true in your life. It's true in my life. As a character, you want something. You want a better job. You want a better career. You want a better family situation. You want, there's all kinds of, maybe you don't have a family and maybe you want that. Maybe you want love. You want recognition. You want respect. You want attention. You want something. I mean, we're all characters in our own show, you know. We're all characters in our own little novel that we're writing. Well, okay, maybe it's a biography. But I think in a lot of cases for us, it's a novel. It's fiction. I'm not saying it should be, but I think in too many of our cases, it is. It's fantasy. It may even be science fiction. Are you a character who wants something? Underneath that, I wrote, a character is what he does. Now, I've spent many hours pondering, especially over the last couple of years, what do I want to do? Because I'm a guy who has spent the better part of about 38, almost 38 years just in business, being around business, being involved in sales, being involved in marketing, being involved in management and leadership, well over 30 years in C-level positions of leadership, full-blown P&L responsibilities and the whole thing. That's where I've lived. That's, as a character, that's what my character has done. About 5 years ago, I began to start thinking, you know, I don't know that I want to do this anymore. I certainly don't want to do it for another 30 years if I should live so long. So now what I want to do, and I begin to think about this statement, a character is what he does, and right now this is what you do. And for me, I'm going to tell you the huge problem, the huge, huge problem, and I don't know if this is a male thing. If you're a woman, I'd like to hear from you, because I suspect this could be kind of a male ego kind of a thing, and I don't mean that in a good way, by the way. I mean that in a pretty negative way. Because for me, it was, okay, I've got all this time spent doing this, and I don't want to do that anymore, but yet that is my identity. And I kind of saw it on this TV show. I kind of saw it on American Chopper. I saw it in Junior, who for 10 years had given himself to build up this business with his father, and he walks out simultaneously. The father fires him. And then the father sues him for his portion of the business. And you could just see him. You could see the mental anguish of him struggling with, a character is what he does and what he had been doing. And he's a young guy. So 10 years, well, when you're in your 30s, 10 years is vastly different than 10 years when you're in your mid-50s, like me. But it's still a long period of time to devote to something, and it's a long enough period of time to associate yourself with that something. Well, he was part of the fabric and DNA of OCC, of Orange County Choppers, and now he's not. Now, mentally, I had to go through a similar process of, okay, this is what I've been. This is who I've been. I've been this business guy doing it over here. And, well, and you may know by now, the main thrust of what I try to do now is done over at leaningtowardwisdom.com. The tagline on this website, Bula Network, is to teach, to inspire, to encourage higher human performance in business and education. Because here, there's only a couple of things that you could even buy from me here on the services page. Some coaching, and those have to do, well, I'm going to tell you more and more what they've got to do with is personal development, but they have to do with business primarily. And more, increasingly, just solopreneurs, just people just trying to make something go, trying to make something go better, go faster, go higher. But it's kind of business. Leaning Toward Wisdom is that exact same tagline, except to teach, inspire, and encourage higher human performance in education. Because what I want to do is I want to serve the adults who are serving the kids. I want to serve the classroom teacher. I want to serve the school administrator. I want to serve those people who they're in the trenches serving the kids, the students. I want to be able to contribute my lifetime of business experience to something that I feel is just, well, it's just, in my mind at least, it's greater. I'm not diminishing business, and I'm not diminishing marketing and selling and all that cool stuff. I grew up with that stuff. That stuff is kind of embedded in my DNA, but, you know, I've said it before, if a character is what he does, is anybody going to remember me because I sold them something? Not likely. But if I can teach somebody, if I can inspire somebody, if I can encourage somebody, if I can persuade and influence somebody, if I can render that kind of service to somebody, then I can make a meaningful difference. And that's just vastly, vastly cooler to me. And so now, over the last few years, now my character, that is me, my character is what I do. Well, now what I do is I don't so much do business. What I do service. I do trying to encourage people. I do trying to convey meaningful messages to people. I'm that voice in your ear telling you, come on, you can do this. You can do this. You can build this bridge and get over it. You flip the page and I wrote, develop into a better character. Develop into a better character. And when you become a better character, your story gets better too. Now, I've read lots of books about storytelling, crafting stories, crafting characters. There's a number of just brilliant people. And if I start naming names, then I'm sure to leave out somebody. The book that's probably gotten a ton of press in recent years, and I think rightfully so, I wouldn't disagree with it, is Donald Miller's book, A Million Miles in a Thousand Years. And if you've not read it, you should. But I would encourage you to read other books, even if you're not a writer. Even if you're not a writer, there are books about storytelling, McKee and many other people, that are just, they're just worth reading. There are books about writing that are worth reading because of what they can teach you about. If you are trying to take from your imagination and craft some story of some make-believe thing, those very same principles apply to our real world life, to us. You and I being these characters in our own little notebooks. But we write our story every day, and we write our story every day not by just what we think, not by just how we feel, not just by the philosophies that we hold, but by the things that we decide to do. The things we decide to do. And I think it's rather important for us to give our own life that kind of attention. I know people who will read one novel after another novel after another novel. Nothing wrong with that. But they will spend more time reading about some fictional characters than they ever spend in crafting their own. That's sad to me. Because we're talking about a real life. We're talking about a life. We're talking about a life with flesh and bones and spirit and soul. And the ability to take that and to make that something meaningful, something valuable, something of benefit to not only that life, but to the lives that love that life and to the lives that can be touched by that life. And so many people spend so much time in their head thinking about the life of some fictional character instead of the life of the character that they themselves represent. Story. Will Randy get his life together? I don't know. You're probably going to have to judge that. Good luck. Are we designed to live through something rather than to attain something? I said yes. Are you a character who wants something? Sure you are. What is it that you want? Because a character, I wrote, a character is what he does. So develop into a better character. When you become a better character, your story gets better too. But now, you and I both know, the stories that make for a real compelling reading, man alive, these characters just go through an awful lot of stuff. I'm a huge fan of the Bourne movies. Now, I was a big Ludlum fan, so I read the books 100 years ago. But these Bourne movies with Matt Damon, I mean, they're terrific. I wish they'd just keep that. I wish they'd keep that character going. But one was on television the other day, and I watched it for the umpteenth time. And it's just, isn't it compelling? But, I mean, look at his story. We think, well, you know, we'd like to have a lake. We'd like to have a lake house. We could just go out there, kind of sit by the dock, throw our fishing pole in the water, just look out over the lake, watch the sun go down, listen to the crickets chirp and the frogs croak. And man, it'd just be great, wouldn't it? Peaceful, easy, nice, relaxing. You wouldn't watch 90 seconds of that on TV. You'd be bored out of your mind. You're like, well, this story sucks. This isn't a good story. My son, when he was younger, well, he's still this way now. He's 30, but something would come on TV. We'd watch it. If there weren't fisticuffs or car chases or bombs exploding or fire breaking out or something. I mean, if that didn't happen within the first 30 seconds or so, well, this is slow. It's how we are wired. You know, that why do you think action thrillers are always popular? If the story's decent. Because there's always stuff going on. There's always all this conflict, all this tension, all these obstacles. Yeah, it's Jason Bourne. Jason Bourne, what an exciting life. Yeah, but I mean, people are chasing him. They're trying to kill him. You know, and he's in one fight after another fight. You know, recently we got news that Bin Laden had been killed, and you can just, all over the internet is this stuff about Navy SEAL Team 6. You know, we're just... And I'm interested, too. I mean, who are these guys? Man, think about that life. Can you imagine? You land in this compound. Well, Rush Limbaugh calls it was a million-dollar hut. It was just a big hut. This wasn't a mansion. two helicopters. And are you shocked by this little tidbit? You know, they had no idea that people were there until they knocked the doors down. Well, these are quiet helicopters, aren't they? Makes you wonder, doesn't it? That these are all really compelling, interesting stories because there's a tremendous amount of mystery and intrigue and conflict. And then we so shy away from that in our own lives. We like, give me that lake house. But that's not exciting. So, hey, embrace it all. Tell your own story and tell it well. My name is Randy Cantrell. Visit the website, BulaNetwork.com. Subscribe to the podcast. Till next time, I'll see you.